From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 131 and the second part of the Keto Crossover with Kim Howerton's podcast Keto Life Support. Join Kim and I as we chat to our buddies Matt Murray, Louise Reynolds and John Slaughter about all sorts of things including whoopie pies and how often you should flip your steak.
Yeah, so like personally, how are we all coping?
I'm like Matt, is that I work from home mostly anyway, so it didn't really disrupt my work schedule. And I go out a little bit more than he does. I leave my house a little bit more than he does, but it didn't really affect me. And that way, I am doing a lot more virtual happy hours, probably talking to people more now than I would have prior to this, seeing them more. But one of the nice things in going back to keto is that one of the nice things that has come out of this is being able to cook more. And I'm not worried about blowing my cover here, Matt. So I get together with Matt and his wife almost every night, and the three of us create something together. And we're also pulling our resources together. So tonight, you know, I'll take meat out of the freezer and I'll cook. And then tomorrow night, it'll be them or something of that nature. So,
well, you saved his bacon the other day, didn't you? Or should I say ribeye? It turned out to be.
Oh, God, that was terrible. Yeah. We went to the supermarket and left all the meat sitting out in the bag. It didn't make it to the fridge. So we lost. Yeah, we lost a bunch of meat. And we had
that was a shame.
Yeah, we had to make an audible. And yeah, John
turned up with ribeyes.
Ran out to the market. Yeah, and got us some ribeyes, which was a good find. But ooh, that was a sad day.
Yeah, as I was saying, Chris got sick because it was like $27 a packet of flap steak. It was like $27 and it just went in the garbage.
Which if you guys have not had, it's a new thing around here. It is one of the best cuts of meat I've ever had in my life.
That's what I have for tonight.
Yeah, I really like I like it.
Yeah.
It's actually fairly, it's leaner than some other cuts, but it's really flavorful. I cook it super fast, so it's really rare.
Yeah. I push it as far as John will let me, because Chris will eat it right off the cow, and I'm pretty close. But every once in a while, John's like, my guy. Like, I pushed it with burgers, and he called me on that one. He's like, this is not cooked. I'm like, all right, all right.
Well, my mom, as well as Matt's mom, growing up, she overcooked everything. Mm-hmm. So, like, I had my steaks. There could not be any pink. So, even just becoming friends with them, I started going pinker and pinker. So, I can be pretty pink now, but I don't like the fleshy. I don't like it being purple. But...
Who knew pork chops were good? I didn't know that growing up. They were right. not
oh,
good.
Oh, yeah.
They were not good.
So shake and baked and overcooked.
Yeah.
My parents overcook meat, too. Yeah. Is this everyone's parents?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
It's a generation thing.
Yeah.
Especially pork. Yeah, yeah. Especially pork, because we all were going to die from trichinosis.
Yep, exactly.
I'll push it with, like, if I make a tenderloin, speak about lean, but I'll do those little pink in the middle, and that's still... A lot of people still are questionable about pork, but it's fine now. Now, you know, people I know that have friends that are, you know, Japanese, that they do sashimi chicken, and I'm never crossing that bridge. Yeah, that's no.
It's dangerous. That's living life on the edge.
I'm going to come out and say that's a no.
That's my thing with how I treat COVID is because John will make fun of me, but when I touch chicken, I look like a surgeon. Like, I walk around with my hands up in the air, and I want an area of like 8 feet around me, because I get so skeeved out by raw chicken. So I just imagine that there's raw chicken everywhere.
It's a good theory.
And I watch. And it makes it easy to go, okay, I can clean everything because it's all got raw chicken all over it.
My favorite meal that I've cooked so far, believe it or not, even though it was simple, was that breakfast out by the fire. It's like the sausage got nice and crispy on the outside. It got a nice crust on it. And then I took the cast iron skillet off of the fire and laid it next to the fire pit, and then just put the eggs on there. And the residual heat cooked the eggs. It was marvelous.
That sounds nice. Yeah. I actually did get a box of ButcherBox meat last week, and so I've been trying out different cuts that they've sent me. Not all of them have been my favorite, but you know, it's kind of a adventure.
John did that for a minute.
Do they sort of send you a mystery box then? Do you order what you want, or you just get what you're given?
No, you can pick if it's beef, pork, chicken, but you don't get to pick the cuts.
Right.
And so I got, I think it was bottom round roast, which if someone told me there are ways to make it taste great, but I did not love it. But I made a really lovely onion gravy with it that was delicious.
Bottom round is roast beef, right? And top round is pot roast?
I think so.
I get them mixed up, but one you can make awesome, and the other one is, I don't know. Roast beef is just a boring, lean piece of
I don't really like roast beef.
That you got to put a gravy on. But pot roast, which is, John made a chili last night out of pot roast, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, chuck roast.
I mean, it might just be user error, but I didn't do a good job with it.
Nah, some cuts of meat are not terribly interesting.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot of flank lately. That's a good, it's lean as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like Kim said, you put it on the grill, slap, slap, it's done in a few minutes. It takes a lot of good flavors, but it doesn't have any fat to it.
You know, I think I finally convinced Matt, because he's a smoker guy as far as
food.
Baby back ribs are concerned.
not cigarettes.
Oh, I no. Yeah, the food smoker. I cook baby back ribs. I make them small enough where I can fit them in the food sealer bags, but I sous vide them and then put a crust on them either on the grill, and they're always so tender.
Yeah.
Matt says, well, he always says, we might be cheating. I'm like, it's not cheating if the food comes out great.
He's a good smoker. You smoked some meat when we were there in the summer, didn't you, Matt? I liked it, quite a sort of delicate touch. I'm a bit iffy with smoked stuff. If the smoking is too strong, I don't like it.
I'm the same.
It had a really nice...
I lean way on the light. Yeah, I use like cherry and apple and only smoke it for like half an hour, because if it tastes like smoke, I don't want anything to do with it.
And Louise, I missed what you just said there.
Well, just transitioning to sort of apartment living. So I left all my cool stuff, like we left the barbecue and the smoker back in Australia in storage. But I did bring all my cool gadgets here. So I've got my sous vide, I've got my new Thermomix, I've got my Instant Pot, I've got my oven grills and those sorts of things. But beef is imported mostly here, or there is beef, but it's not nice beef. So imported Australian or New Zealand lamb. So the red meats are sort of obviously a little bit off my menu, only for special occasions. that lots of pork and chicken and fish, which has been an interesting sort of mix because I went from, from carnivore last year when I was living in the UK. So, you know, that was a whole big change coming here. So, and a lot more vegetables. So I've reintroduced vegetables to have with the leaner pork and chicken. So it just wasn't feeling like I was satiated here. But I have managed to do the pork belly. So that's it's called moo gwarp. So moo being pork and gwarp is the deep frying. So it's a delicious street hawker dish. Oh, it's just absolutely with the Chinese five spices and deep fried.
Nice.
So we're doing lots of deep fried stuff. Lots of chicken wings. Yes. So that's probably an interesting sort of mix of just trying to make pork and chicken interesting on most meals.
Yeah, I've noticed that I've been eating a lot more vegetables than I had prior to this outbreak. I think in part because vegetables are very plentiful right now, and the vegetable market I'm going to has a lot of interesting things, and you can make interesting variety of things. And I also don't want to hit the meat too hard based on the supply chain. Mm-hmm. But I'm certainly hitting it fairly hard. But I definitely have been eating a fair amount more fresh veggies.
Yeah, we added some we have green beans sometimes, but like peas, which aren't, you know, the most keto thing in the world. And there's this spinach kale mix, and kale, oddly enough, leans heavy on the carb side. But I think we've upped our vegetable too, just because what are we going to do? So we have a big gratin or something every meal, stuff that we probably wouldn't, like, I don't know that we'd eat a lot of peas normally, but we're like, well, they got peas, let's get peas and we, right, you know, make something out of those. So yeah, I'm with you on that, Kim. We're definitely eating vegetables that we didn't eat a lot of before.
Right. And Daisy, to translate, that's a gratin.
Oh, yes. A gratin, yes. A gratin.
Gratin.
Yes.
There you go.
We've had, last week, I think it was, we had dandelion pesto. We made dandelion mm-hmm. pesto and then had it with shrimp and the shirataki noodles.
Nice.
The one thing I thought we'd get into more would be breads, keto breads, but we haven't really much got into those, but I thought with being stuck at home, oh, let's make some breads. And
well, see, oddly enough, being stuck at home, as I was saying, my life hasn't changed dramatically. So I'm still working every single day and putting in full days. It's not like the workload has decreased. In fact, because of my job, our customers depend on us. So we actually have been doing a lot of creative thinking as to how to continue to offer them the products that we offer them so that they can work from home as well.
Our big thing is with three kids, we don't have after school events now.
Well, yeah, that's
so
true.
We don't have gymnastics. We don't have volleyball. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have time to spend in the kitchen or watching Survivor as the rest of my family does.
Well, and Matt, you're lucky in that your kids are all, your youngest is 12 right now.
Yeah.
I actually really feel for people who are trying to work full time with like a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. That seems rough.
You hear a lot of really hectic conference calls these days and people are apologizing and you're like, you don't need to apologize for your children being home or your husband walks in or your wife walks in on the call. So yeah, that's another situation where I work from here at home all the time. So they know if they do come downstairs, you come downstairs quiet and you wait for me to say, I'm not on a call or I'm on a call. So they haven't, you know, caused any grief. And yeah, 12, 15, 18, those are my three. So they're pretty self-sustainable. Yeah.
My niece is a teacher and she has 4 boys at home ranging from about 4 years old to 13 years old. Yeah. So I feel for her.
Cool. Have you noticed any difference, Kim, then in your keto, I guess?
Well, I think
you said you're eating a few more vegetables, but
yeah, I have not really, like, I, you know, in my coaching groups, I've noticed there's sort of 2 camps. Half of the people are like using this time to like really stick to keto and be really like diligent and on it and cook. And I think in a way that's therapeutic for them because it gives them something to focus on, because one of the issues that we are experiencing in our personal lives right now is sort of this loss of control. Right? We can't do exactly what we want to do when we want to do it. And that loss of control can make us feel uneasy, feel anxious, feel out of control, right? And so for some people, that's sort of moved them into being like, okay, what in my life can I control? And I think food has become a thing that helps them stay sane. And then like the other half of people are feeling a lot. I mean, some people are kind of just fine and normal, but even the people who seem on the surface fine and normal underneath are having maybe some feelings that they weren't experiencing before, a little bit of unease. And they're finding that adding that extra layer of watching what they eat really challenging. And, you know, in part, I theorize that that's because maybe they're at a place in their food issue cycle where they have not yet developed other coping mechanisms, and food kind of is their go-to stress coping mechanism, and getting that, you know, release of dopamine from eating a lot of carbs or something that hits that sweet note gives them a bit of calm for even just an instant. And so I find it's split. Some people are doubling down and some people are really struggling not to binge. Some people are binging on keto foods, but also some people are just binging on a pack of Doritos because their kids are eating them.
Well, it's the interesting thing, isn't it, between a lot of people are finding because they're home more that they snack more, and some people find the reverse. It's really interesting, just that changing up your norm, how it impacts your eating patterns.
And I think it's super important that in this time that we make conscious food decisions, no matter what those decisions might be, that we just try to not let food be an area where we're mindless about it, I think makes a big difference for people.
Yeah, it's interesting because at this time, and I've been reflecting quite a lot on the fact that I've been baking more. So while I was in the UK and living quite, well, I was unaccompanied, so Andrew was here in Australia, I didn't keto bake, I didn't do any keto treats. I was pretty much lazy carnivore. But since I've been back and repartnered, you know, here with Andrew, my language of love is to give. I show my love through food. So I've been doing a whole bunch of keto baking, and that's a little bit higher carb. I mean, we're in maintenance now anyway, so we've been making peanut butter cookies. Oh. With my fresh cheese, I've been doing baked ricotta puddings or cheesecakes. In the Instant Pot, I make, you know, I'm not sure if it's 3 or 4 gallons of yogurt in the Instant Pot. So there's a whole bunch of extra cheeses in our life now that I never really had before. But I know what you're saying about the dopamine release, because I think what it is, it's also because there's this chronic low-level stress that we're experiencing. It's either, as you're saying, it's a grief, it's an adjustment disorder, this is our new normal. You know, that these are the things that we're trying to adjust to. And as you said, we're either going to control that, or we're not going to have these maladaptive behaviours where I'm going to self-soothe by having cookies, keto treats, so approved. But we're going to get that sweet spot, as you said, through that dopamine. But I think it's because of this chronic low-level stress. And a lot of it is, you know, it's boredom, it's frustration, it's this, you know, this sense of when is this going to end, and, you know, give me a due date. When am I going to stop? You know, what are we doing? You know, it's, yeah, frustration, particularly. That chronic cortisol release makes me hungry, you know, and I'm bored and I'm frustrated.
And the kitchen's right over there.
But it's all good, right? It's a keto treat, which I know, you know, I know that you're okay with all of that, and because you're a fabulous cook, and you know, you're a fabulous creator. But it's still I've been quite mindful that I feel bloated, and you know, I know that this is probably maxing out my carb limits with the vegetables and obviously the peanut butter and the cheese. But it's, oh, I don't know, I'm at a loss as what to do, because I've used to exercise quite a lot, but my gym's closed. So I'm trying to find some apps, and, you know, there's Down Dog Yoga and Chris Hemsworth, even if he makes good eye candy on YouTube, that's exercise, isn't it? So, yeah.
Does it get your heart rate up?
I need to get into the... I need to get some body weight exercises happening.
So. Yeah, I think for me, one of the things...
It's a challenge.
It is a super challenge, yeah. I think one of the things that I've been focusing on more than anything else has been keeping a stable blood sugar, because one of the things I'm super aware of, and I think Louise probably could talk to this being more medically minded, that in this time of health crises, having high blood sugars is especially dangerous. And so wanting to make sure that even if I eat an extra tomato, you know, which is more carbs than I usually would eat. It's not something that affects my blood sugar negatively. And so for me, my main focus has been on, you know, good blood sugar levels. Louise, what do you think?
I really agree with that because as you were sort of mentioning about the incidence rates, particularly for COVID at this time, and those people that are affected mortality-wise had one or more comorbidities. And if we can particularly are vulnerable because of the higher blood sugars and certainly impacting on us, it's going to be better to get that blood sugar control.
Yeah, I think that, so, you know, because sometimes it's hard in that moment to think like, oh, well, do I really care if I gain 5 pounds during my quarantine? But I do care that I don't end up in the hospital on a ventilator. Yeah. So, you know, putting your priorities in order and then acting accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. I've kind of gone the opposite way to
contrarian
to the way a lot of people have gone. Yeah, I've for various reasons, probably my mood being low for about the last year, really, I've been on again, off again, and sort of went into this, I think, sort of somewhere in between, and managed to get myself addicted again to crack zero. So I was mainlining that again and wasn't completely off keto, but eating a fair few non-keto things. And actually, it's kind of scared me into tightening my act up, something that I've known I should be focusing on a lot more for a while. But it's really, you know, it seems to be without question that it improves your chances of doing well if you do happen to get the virus, the better off you are, especially when it comes to things like blood sugars. So I've really tightened things up and I feel a lot better for it. So
yeah,
I think you're right, Kim. I think it's good to focus on these things.
Yeah, I think one of the things I found is I'm like, okay, what do I want to concentrate on and what can I be more relaxed on? One of the things is I'm, you know, keeping my fasting window. You know, I do, usually it's a 16-8, sometimes it's an 18-6, and keeping that same fasting window and eating window. And then the other thing is that some days now I'm eating 3 times, not just 2. And that seems to be doing okay for me. I just kind of listen to that, what I want in that window that feels not whatever I want, but, you know, when I want to eat. I've actually managed to lose 5 pounds somehow since we've started being at home. I actually attribute it to the fact that I'm sleeping more. Because if I look at what I'm eating now versus before, I'm not being super strict. And I've been in periods of much stricter behavior. I am not going off keto, but I am allowing a few treats here and there. And yet I seem to find that I'm sleeping an extra hour or so. And other than a few nights where I had trouble sleeping, it's been fairly smooth sailing. So, you know, who knows what's going on, but I'm keeping an eye on things.
It's reminded me how keto does impact your appetite. The higher my carb content goes, the more I'm snacking. I'm a dreadful one for late night snacking. Mm-hmm. But since I've really tightened it up, my appetite's way down and I've pretty well managed to nix that late time snacking, which, like you were saying with sleep, that has a good impact on sleep and sleeping better.
Which is really interesting because, you know, Andrew's not going to the embassy. So Andrew usually set the alarm for like 6:15. He was out the door at 7, religiously 7:18, because he has to, you know, get to the embassy before 8 o'clock. So we actually get an extra hour of sleep in the morning. So that's really good with him working from home. We eat twice a day, but we'll have coffee up until lunchtime. So our lunch might be breaking our fast between, say, 1 o'clock. But we have extended our eating window a little bit until a main meal might be at 6 to 7 p.m. with a dessert. So something sweet like the yogurt or the cheese. Which is interesting because we never used to do that back home in Australia. So it's been an interesting contrast this time round being back together that, you know, what we've included or what we've allowed at this time, but we're still only having alcohol twice a week, which is really interesting because in the expat community, you know, there's lots, it's very social, alcohol is very, very liberal. but we tried to put boundaries around what our alcohol intake would be, and that's not school nights, so that's a Friday or a Saturday night. And even then, it's just a large bottle of beer. It's been really interesting sort of looking at trying to get those controls and those limits, especially when you're working from home. I don't know how you do it, Matt, like, you know, running upstairs, getting the cookies. Yeah, always in the pantry.
Well, I was never a big snacker even before I was keto. Like, I've never eaten before one usually, so that was not a big deal. My thing is, it's like Daisy, like after dinner, I want to have some chocolate or some peanut butter or something. My snacking is late, right before bed, when it shouldn't be. We always ate dinner late anyways. We barely, just because of the way life works, ate before 7. We've seen that slide into 8 or 8:30 now. And my wife is be in bed at, you know, 10 o'clock, get up at 5 something to get the kids ready for school. And there's no school. And she works for university. So she's working, but she's an event scheduler and stuff. So there's not a lot for her to do right now. And we're seeing, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock. The other day it was like 1:46 in the morning. And she's like, what are we doing up? And I'm like, we're transitioning in back into nighttime people, like when we were young, you know, which is the biggest change I've seen is, yeah, the shifting to staying up entirely much later than I'm used to at this point in my life. You know, I'd usually be in bed by 11. And now if I'm, you know, looking at something in my phone at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's our major change, I think, is that shift of time.
Yeah, I'm not shifting. I still get up relatively the same time. So usually by 6:30, and I'm usually in bed by 11 or 11:30. This morning, for some reason, I was doing some stretching last night and I didn't get up until 10 o'clock this morning. So that was a shift. I also made a conscious decision not to buy beer when this all started. So I had some vodka on hand. I did buy a few bottles of wine just to have, but I do miss some beer. And not to do a plug here, but Dogfish Head Brewery, which is a local Delaware brewery, they make a low-carb beer called Slightly Mighty. It's still 3 grams of carbs per beer. But if you want the taste of a beer, I plan to go to State Line Liquors later today and get some of that, because I would like to have a beer. But it is really nice. Besides the keto cooking, I'm with Lou. It's like I like to create in the kitchen. So and actually Daisy and Kim as well, and Matt. So I like to create in the kitchen, and I like making tasty things to give to people. And if I'm making it, I want it to be perfect. If I make a batch of cookies and the bottom of them are too brown for my liking, those cookies will not see anyone else's, and no one else will see those cookies. Matt was over here the other night. Sorry, Matt, I ratted you out. And I was making granola. And it's actually funny, I was rocking out to a song, and I just happened to turn around. I saw someone walking up my walkway, and I saw it was Matt, so I went and opened the door, and I said, you almost gave me quite a scare if you had knocked on the door, because I had no idea anyone was out there. But I was making some granola, and I gave Matt the chore of chopping up the macadamia nuts to put in it. And I said, okay, I want you to take the knife and cut them into like little pieces. And he's like, why don't you just... I'm like, because then you're going to get some powder in there. And I don't want the nuts powdery. I want the little pieces of nuts in. So there's my perfectionism.
I'd have done it like Matt.
I had to hand cut like 200 macadamias.
A quarter of a cup, maybe. What you know if. How Matt can exaggerate.
What if? No, never.
But also, his dad had not been feeling well, so there it was 2 points. So I've been doing more meditation and more stuff in that realm. So I gave Matt something to focus his mind on, because I knew that he was probably a little anxious about talking to his parents. So he had the nuts to focus on in a very meticulous task.
Wax on, wax off.
You had an ulterior motive.
Exactly.
Yes. I find chopping food very relaxing to me. I love the mise en place. Sorry if I butchered that there, Daisy, but that's how I say it.
Mise en place.
Yes, that. it gets me out of my head. So I love doing prep work in the kitchen.
And I gave him some granola to take home.
Oh, it was good too. Yeah, it was good.
I bet it was good. Most of the stuff you cook, well, all of the stuff I've ever tasted of yours, John, is delicious.
Oh, the blueberry. Cheesecake. That's my favorite. That was nice.
Oh, thank you. Strudel thing.
Mm. Yeah, John's way to pass time is to make desserts. So we've had lemon whoopie pies. We had some, what was that? Chocolate cake.
Chocolate pie, yeah.
Chocolate pie. He made the girls a non-keto chocolate chip cookie cake. He's a baker, and he's been back at it, so it's been nice.
I wish I lived around the corner from you, John, or perhaps it's a good thing I don't, actually.
That was actually one of the hardest things about going keto, because I am a baker and I've always enjoyed it. And like Louise, it's like I like making stuff. It's like regardless of eating it or not, I like making it and giving it to people.
Mm. It's quite fun, the challenge though, isn't it, sometimes? Trying to keto-fy something to your satisfaction.
Yeah. It is. It really is. I've done well with some things. Some things not so well, but it's worth to keep trying. So I have a recipe for the Whoopie pies, and I started off making them pumpkin. I've made chocolate ones. I've made chocolate with chocolate filling, chocolate with, I think, peppermint filling. The lemon ones I just made. So it's one recipe.
And what exactly is it? Is it like a cookie sandwich or a cake sort of sandwich? Or?
Yeah, cookie sandwich.
And it's like the top part of a cupcake, but two of those with cream in the middle.
Yeah.
Right.
A muffin top.
Yeah,
but a
muffin top.
Pie is different. It's not like a hard cookie. It's a right. cake.
No, it's a cookie. Yeah.
Soft cake. Yeah.
It's like if you turned an Oreo into a cake.
Right.
So no, that's a good description, like the top off a cupcake. Yeah. It's a bit crisper than cake, but it's not quite cookie.
Right. It's kind of spongy.
I use my my Whoopie pie pan for the baking of the peanut butter cookies that I make. So because the recipe actually does 12, so I just use the pan, and it's easier than just the Silpat, because the oven, I'm still getting used to the oven, so I'm not quite confident. So just using the Whoopie pie pan for the cookies has been really, really handy.
I tell you what I'd like to keto-fy. I don't know if you've tried them. Yeah, Louise, they're not keto. And I don't know exactly what the ingredients are. It's mostly coconut cream. It must have some kind of thickening agent like corn flour or something. In my head, I feel like they might be keto-fiable. I'd have to get the actual recipe. But they're like sort of little dumpling pans with this coconut mix that they cook in, and then they sandwich them together, and they have this sort of quite crisp outside, but then it's soft and gooey in the middle, coconutty yumminess. They are delicious. You can usually get them in the food markets.
What are they called? Bangkok.
I don't know.
Because I'm going to look them up and see about keto-fying them.
Coconut thingies, yeah. They are delicious.
Daisy's description is going to make a search hard.
You see them on the streets, like the hawkers on the street with the carts, and they have a big, like a pancake pan, and they make them on the little sort of, you know, they're like the little Dutch pancakes.
So that's they right. actually it's a have little thing with little shallows
in. Yeah. And then they pop them, them together. So, yeah, but because it's a wheat-based pancake mixture as well, so but the filling, you know, is the coconut.
Louise, I was thinking about peanut butter cookies this morning, so that might be on my agenda for today.
Simple as, really simple, but I wouldn't mind. Apparently, Matt's got a good recipe, so Matt has to share his recipe.
For what?
You were talking about peanut butter cookies the other day.
Well, we had that brand. I don't want to say anybody's brand name, but we had him and said John could probably make better cookies than that. He has made keto peanut butter cookies before. I don't bake at all. So if I mentioned anything about baking, it came from John. Yeah, John bakes. I'm the meat guy.
Yeah, Kim, I need to partner with you, because I am horrible about writing things down, because that's not the way I cook. I kind of experiment, and I always forget to write things down. And especially if I'm cooking, not baking, because it's like, it needs something. What does it need? Okay, a little bit of this. Nah, it needs something else. And that's how I cook. I keep tasting and say, okay,
the recipe
now
just has to taste, to taste, to taste.
Yes.
That's pretty
much
one
of the things that I've started doing recently is I got like a little clippy camera mount that I can mount to one of my cabinets, because I'm trying to do more cooking videos. Have been filming myself cooking things, and I'm trying to remember to say out loud what I'm putting in so then I can watch the video.
That's
back.
A great idea. Actually, I got a GoPro because the last keto fest that we went to, some ladies tried to encourage Matt and I to start our own brand, keto recipes or
you
cooking
should.
Demonstrations.
I was trying to get you to do
well,
that.
Well, someone has spent their entire lives trying to stay off the internet. This guy right here. so he didn't want to do that. So I got a GoPro so I could do a point of view cooking demonstration. So I do have a Facebook page that I started, but I haven't posted anything on there yet. It's Most Keto, MOS Keto. I started the page so that I could do cooking demonstrations and have them on there. But
now you're required to actually put them up, because now people will know.
Yes. Actually, the GoPro is right here. So I'm going to have to get it charged and do that. I always think after the fact, like as I'm starting to cook, I'm like, oh, like the granola the other night, I'm like, I should get the GoPro. Oh, it's not charged.
Yeah, you got to be ready at all times.
Yes. I need to learn from the masters.
He'll probably break me down and I'll end up online. Yeah.
One thing I will say is, like, if we do it, the cooking demos, we need Matt to be a little bit more verbal than he was at Keto Fest, where I said, Matt, what are you doing over there? Chopping onions. Back to you.
That was my finest moment.
Did that video ever make it online? I don't know if it did it ever get up?
I don't know. I've seen it, but I think we just got it directly from Carl, but...
I'm going to have to go and look for that now, and I shall post it in the show notes if it is available.
Chopping onions, back to you.
I've got a feeling that was the only year that did have videos.
I think it was.
I think so.
Must have been the first year, because I was trying to look for Pam's mozzarella.
Yeah, I don't think
and
that.
And burrata, because that's not, I haven't been winning on that front.
Maybe it just was the first.
She did that
year.
At the wine place, right? That wasn't at the...
I don't think they filmed that at all.
Yeah, that was over at the wine and cigar place or something, I think.
Yeah.
The ones they did put out, though, they edited them right down. I don't think there was any of the interaction in the videos.
Yeah.
It's just like a really short...
The salmon one, salmon frittata was really quick. It's just a minute and a half.
Well, see, that's the thing with the second Keto Fest where we actually did the demo. Everything was prepped ahead of time. So it's like, well, how do I now it's just like kind of putting it together. So it's like, ev-a-fleet, that's all. Yeah. You know, it's like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Kim, didn't you do chocolate eclairs that year?
Oh, that was delicious.
I've lost track of the years. I did lemon cake the first year, chocolate eclairs the second year.
Those are good.
And then tiramisu last year. Yeah. I like the eclairs. I haven't made those since then.
They were really good. I was thinking about those this morning, too.
It's really simple. It's just like you make essentially like oopsie bread or cloud bread with some sweetener. And then you make like a sort of a cream that goes in the filling with it's just basically cream and egg yolks and a little bit of thickener and sweetener. And then you drizzle it with chocolate. Really? That's all that's required.
Yum. I can do that.
Yeah.
Well, this was just a really good conversation. It's like Zooming, having happy hour with my friends. Yes, exactly.
All right. So this is Daisy's top tips that we get to have on Keto Life Support now as well, because we usually don't do top tips, but Daisy does. So win-win.
I do. I like to round off with a top tip, and it's going to be extra special this week because we're going to have five. Who wants to go first?
I'll go. I guess, and again, this is circumstantial if you can, you know, if you can grill and stuff, but I do a lot of grilling. And in all the years, there's so much rules and stigma about cooking outside and whatnot. What I use gas, full disclosure, whatever. Over time, I've learned the biggest thing you want to do is move the stuff you're grilling as much as you can. That's counterintuitive to what people say. But anytime you move it to somewhere that's hotter than where it was, you get more browning. You get the Maillard reaction. You get more flavor. There's purists that say flip it once, flip it twice. I'll flip it 35 times. don't be afraid to use a thermometer. I have a ThermoPen. It's a big, until you learn, and I still use it, you can do the thing where you push your hands and all that. But I don't see any shame in breaking the rules and doing what works for you, especially when you're grilling. I cook everything on full blast with the lid open. I break every rule there is, but I've been doing it for 20 some years, and that's what works for me. So I guess my top tip is avoid all the stigma, you know, learn your tools and stuff and do what works best for you. And don't worry about what people tell you you should be doing.
I read that about steaks and I've tried doing that. It makes more sense to me logically to keep flipping it and moving it around the hot spot in the pan.
Yeah, I think it really helps. But a lot of people are like, if you know what you're doing, you only got to flip it once and good for you. But
now they've actually, I'm definitely in the flipper category because I've read studies about this. They've actually looked into it. And if you flip it constantly, like every 30 seconds, that's too fast.
Yeah, right.
But if you're flipping it every minute, what's happening is your steak will cook faster and more evenly because the top side is still hot while it's up and then you're turning it. And so it's kind of cooking from both sides the whole time.
Yep.
And so I'm definitely team flipper.
Good.
So there's an optimal flipping frequency.
Yes.
frequency.
And having had Matt Stakes, I have always said that there's no point in spending a lot of money outside the home for a steak when, you know, a friend of mine cooks steaks better than any steak I've had out, except for steaks that I cook over the fire pit, which are really awesome as well.
Yeah, I'll vouch.
Right, so is John's tip go to Matt's house for steak?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The New York steak lesson, the food lesson that I had at the New York Steak Club, that actually told me about the flipping and to get the cross-hatching, as well as using the meat thermometer. So I'm a team flipper and a thermometer. I like to poke and flip.
Yeah.
Well, we've all heard what you like to do with your meat thermometer, Louise.
Louise or Kim, would you like to go second with your tip of the day? We'll do boy, girl, boy, girl.
Okay. Louise is making a face, so Louise has to go now.
Okay.
My top tip is about being kind to yourself. And at this time, we're probably spending, unlike Matt, who's not on social media, we might be spending a bit more time on social media. And, you know, there's lots of memes and that's a really great outlet. And there was a post the other day that said, if you don't come out of this quarantine with a new language or a new skill, then you're not using your time effectively. And I think Kim has already sort of said that there are different reactions. We have different reactions to different stresses or expectations. And I've spoken to Daisy before about Gretchen Rubin's work, and she's got these four typologies. And people do different things when we place expectations on them. You know, there might be this stress, as I said, this chronic low-level stress reaction, which is obviously being evoked and we're having this roller coaster of emotions. And at this time, if you're going to be a rebel, you know, you're probably full on rebelling against, you know, what this quarantine means for you. You know, if you're going to be an upholder and you're going to stick by the rules, all power to you, girlfriend, you do you. I'm an obliger, so I'm going to stick by the rules, but it's external because it's external accountability. And, you know, those rules are there for a reason and I understand that, so I'm going to oblige that. But then, you know, you could be the questioner and you could question, why do I need to do this? Who says that? Where are the stats? Who told me? Show me the evidence. And you're going to be questioning every new rule or regulation that comes in. So hashtag you do you, and the four tendencies might help you understand what that roller coaster of emotions are at this time. So whatever the typology is, whether it's your language of love, the four tendencies, your Myers Briggs, just having that kindness and understanding this reaction to this new normal is obviously this adjustment period.
Well, now my top tip sounds kind of petty.
I know you always get, when it's a group call, you're like, that was crap, Mike. I've been out-tipped.
Yes. Top tip by Lou.
Well, we all bring something different, and I'm just obviously the consummate overthinker.
I hear you.
Sometimes you need mental help, and sometimes you just need a damn good steak.
Yes.
I'm all for eating a good steak that will make me feel really good right now. Because I don't have beef. Beef is expensive,
and we feel for you.
I'm in a whole bunch of sadness right now. So.
Yeah, because of the liquor stores.
And
the beef.
And that too. Beef and a beer. Oh my gosh.
I wish I could help you out there, Lou. I can send Kim toilet paper, but I can't send you liquor. I guess that would be my turn. And when Matt started talking about steaks, I was thinking, oh, maybe for my next tip, I will talk about my experiences with sweeteners. But my original one is actually more along the line with Lou's, and that is that during this time, especially since we spent so much time in the beginning talking about COVID, that I think it's really important to take care of your health, your mental health, and your physical health at this time. As Kim was saying, with the blood sugar, even though it's going to give you some comfort to eat that chocolate chip cookie, and I did have some of that chocolate chip cookie pie that I made for the girls, even though it's going to give you that initial bit of comfort, overall, if you continue to eat like that, it's not going to make you feel good. It's going to make you feel worse. Your mental health is going to feel worse because you know you're not doing the things to keep your health up. At least that's the way I feel. I know when I start eating sugar again that, you know, I'm going to want to eat more sugar, and it's going to affect my mental health as well. So do the things that you enjoy. Try not to overthink, because that's where the anxiety comes from. We start thinking about the grand picture and, you know, this, when is this going to end? Don't think about that. Think of what you're doing right now. Think of what you can do to make yourself feel good, whether it's read a book, whether it's doing some jumping jacks, whether it's being online talking to your friends. Do whatever it takes to make yourself feel good and take care of your health right now.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, think about other people too. Like, don't be afraid to reach out to people.
Yes.
That maybe you haven't even spoken to lately, because I have friends that are all by themselves in apartments, all by themselves. So I constantly every day just kind of say, hey, man, how you doing? Do you want to do a video chat? You know, are you getting some sun sitting on your deck? Just kind of letting people know that even though they're physically alone, that there are people that are thinking about them and want them to be well.
Yeah. And I think that that goes to, even though we're being told to, you know, socially distance, you know, the social distance and the physical distance, there's a nuance between being socially distant as opposed to physically distant. We're being asked to be physically distant from each other, but we still need to maintain those social connections. Yes. And, you know,
yeah,
the WhatsApps or the Zooms or whatever we're using, Skype, you know, FaceTime is really so important, so we're not feeling like isolated at this time. Excellent point.
We did a Zoom, I was telling you last weekend, with our Firefly camper family, and I was outside on the deck to start it, and I didn't realize it, but one of the ladies that was on the Zoom is in Baltimore. She's a doctor in Baltimore. She lives about 3 blocks from the hospital where she works, and she saw me outside, and she's like, oh, that's so nice that you're outside. I never even considered that, you know, there are folks that are kin, that are stuck in an apartment and don't have the luxury of getting outside. Things like this are so important, just to keep people connected.
Yeah, we have a stand. We're going to meet them again tomorrow. We have a group of work people that were spread out, and one of them, again, is alone, all by himself. So we do a happy hour after work, just get on, you know, talk to each other for about 45 minutes about nothing in particular. And it just kind of, I said, it gets the work stink off you. It makes you, you know, laughing, and you're seeing your friends. And yeah, I think it's really important. And I hate this video conference thing. It's so awkward to me. My kids do it, but I'm dealing with it, because it does. It really helps when you get off the call. It's good to see people. It's good to laugh and know that, you know, we're all in this, all of us. And we're better together.
And we have a friend that's in New Jersey, in Rutherford, New Jersey, which is up near New York. And they have a much different situation. Thankfully, they have a yard. They have a 3-year-old, 4-year-old child. Mm-hmm. But the cases there are, the last I checked, it was about 8,000 now, with about 400 deaths. So they're in a much different situation than we are. And you can see when we Zoom with them that, you know, it is on his mind. And it's important for us to reach out to him and have that connection, because then he's part of us. So when we made dinner last night, he was part of us making dinner, because if he were here, that's what we would be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean, along the same lines, I think, you know, I touched on it earlier, but I think for me, allowing yourself some space to be deliberate in your life right now can be a big difference. So I know that's easy for a single Kim living with her wonderful boyfriend to say, when I don't have small children running around and screaming and I don't have, you know, conference calls all day long to deal with. But I think all of us can still take a moment to be deliberate about things. And what do I mean by that is to say, a lot of times when we're in this fight or flight, constant stress issue, like Louise mentioned, right? Even though maybe we feel okay, but underlying all of it, like we might sense we're a little closer to tears more often. We want to snap at people a little more often. Our nerves are just a little more exposed. That has an effect. And one of the things I find that can really bring us back to ourselves is to be deliberate. What do I mean? Is to take the time to think about what you're doing, to plan your day, to plan your meals, to exert some level of control where you have control, you know, and I don't mean like being overly controlling, but to be like, hey, what are we going to have for dinner tonight? You know, ahead of time, you know, can really help us feel a little bit saner and a little more centered, and taking that time. And so like, I have a rule, like no snacking, because to me, snacking is always an emotional event, as Robert Siwa says. So snacking is a way to distract yourself. Or sometimes if you're like, well, I'm actually legitimately hungry between my meals. Well, you weren't very deliberate maybe in your last meal. So if you don't plan a good meal, eat a good meal, feel fully satisfied, you're coming away from that setting yourself up to snack. And so you can start with one thing. I'm going to be deliberate about when I go to bed. And then you can add another. I'm going to be deliberate about my first meal. And you can add another. I'm going to be deliberate about dinner. I'm going to be. So like making decisions and following them through, having that where you can. There's going to be 20,000 things you can't control, but being deliberate in the things that you can bring some sanity to places where our nervous system is jangly.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
Oh, it's me, isn't it?
Yes.
It's you now.
Get a dog. No, I mean, I'm kidding. That's
Milo's chained up fallback. Outside. I don't want him barking.
Mine is actually barking, but thankfully in the distance. Joking aside, I've seen lots of posts in the States about how refuges and things are open for adopting and fostering animals. And I did notice today someone locally posted that the SPA, the biggest place in France that has refuges all over the country, are opening their doors again. You're actually allowed to go to them and adopt a dog, so that's good. But that's not my top tip. That was my top tip last time. I had a minor meltdown panic before we started recording because I suddenly remembered that I was going to have to come up with a top tip.
The shoe is on the other foot.
Exactly.
Well, see, you should not know about it like I didn't, so I had to come up with one.
Exactly. But no, I think mine would be to set up your own spam filters, as it were. I've lived, a lot of my life is online these days. I live out in the middle of nowhere and I don't really see people that often. Obviously, at the moment, I see people very much less often. So I'm quite used to being online a lot. I suffer with problems with my mental health, so I do distance myself from a lot of the things that I find triggering. So things like the news I don't watch. And I feel it's one of the reasons that I came to the whole COVID-19 thing a little bit late, and I felt a little bit guilty about that. So I do follow daily John Campbell. I look at worldometers every day to look at the stats. And I have to say, I've probably got a little bit obsessive about it. I've sort of gone the other way. But I think it comes back to that thing about control, and it's working out what you can do to self-soothe. And for me, I am part rebel, part questioner, and I do like to get down into the data and try to explain why something is going on. And it helps me to look at the data and things like that. But I'm very selective about what I look at. So I do get things drifting down to me on my Facebook feed, and I have filtered some people out because of some of the memes and things that have come through. I still don't watch the news, but I do keep up to date with things that I feel are important. For me, it feels very surreal. I'm looking out my window now and everything's like it always is. But it always feels like when I'm planning a shopping trip, it feels like, you know, I might encounter the zombie apocalypse,
right?
Or something.
Yes.
I just in this real surreal world. But I think for me, it's getting enough of the information that I feel that I need, but setting up filters so that I don't get the things that are going to really mess with my head.
Daisy, I live that way as well. It's like I do not watch the news on a regular basis because the news in and of itself is negative, because that's what sells. So I try not to watch that. And even the Facebook feeds, as you were saying, it's like when this first started, everyone was all together. We're all in this together. And then now you start getting the politicalization of it, you know, and I don't depend on our government, but I do depend on my neighbors. I've offered my neighbors, three of my neighbors are older and all three have had heart surgery. Don't go out, you know, let me go out for you and I'll bring your stuff. I'll sit it on your porch for you. You can come out and spray it down with bleach or alcohol or whatever. But I think that having that one-on-one connection and getting, I guess, not as global, but getting back to community is important. And also looking out the window. I have a bird feeder outside, both in the front and in the back. To sit and watch the birds is awesome, because you know what? The birds aren't affected by COVID at all. Yeah. They're still being birds out there. I still see the squirrels out there stealing the food. I posted on Facebook last week. It's like I took Milo for a walk, and it was nice to look up and see the moon up there and see Venus. And, you know, they're still the moon and Venus just like they were, you know, thousands of years ago. They're still there. The world still exists.
And John has chickens, so he is the giver of eggs, which is awesome. Nice. Which is awesome. Yes.
Oh, nice. Oh, there's nothing like fresh eggs. Yeah. I really miss my chickens. World apart.
They've ramped up their productivity, I guess, with COVID. He's bringing over dozens, you know, quite often.
I've got 3.5 dozen eggs in my kitchen right now and haven't looked for today yet.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Because eggs are a little in short supply these days. Yeah,
they are.
And these are so different. It's cliche, but the eggs are so different when they come from your own chickens.
Yeah, I didn't post the picture on Facebook, but I made an omelet for dinner one night this week. And one of the eggs was, the yolk was really golden. So it made the whole omelet really golden. It looked really pretty.
They are different though, aren't they? I remember it. Mm-hmm. Mine used to be completely free range and they used to go all over the place. They used to start out one side of the house. They had this routine. They'd come round and the cockerel used to tap on the front door and they used to go right down into the fields, up onto the, I say road, it's just a track.
So you'd have to like go on a Easter egg hunt, literally?
No, they were very good. They laid their eggs inside where they were supposed to, but they ranged all over the place and ate bugs and grass and all sorts of things. And the eggs were
delicious.
They're so fun to watch too. I mean, they're not very bright, but they're
the scratching.
They're great characters.
And they are. They've got personalities. John has one named Sunshine. She's from his first batch and he doesn't have any roosters. So she's like the head of the chicken pack. And she's always the first one out to see what's going on, to check out, you know, before the other chickens come out of the coop and stuff. So I got to go over later today to help him reinforce their run. And they're fun to watch, run around and do their chicken thing.
What's the collective noun for chickens?
Chickens.
A flock,
What's
I guess.
The collective noun. Flock. Is it a flock?
Are they a flock? I don't know.
Yeah, I think
it might be a brood of hens. I don't know.
I don't know.
Because I discovered the other day that kittens, the collective noun for kittens is a puddle.
Oh.
A puddle of kittens. I love that.
I like, what is it for crows? A murder of crows?
Murder.
Yes. Yeah.
I finished watching that Tiger King, and I must say, you people have, what is it? You all have. You're a weird bunch.
I haven't watched that. I'm going to have to. Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, apparently. And Daisy, it's brood. A brood of chickens. Flock, but brood is the chicken wing.
I think flock is on the wing, but chickens are they ever on the wing?
It says flock is a really general term for birds, but brood is for chickens. Baby chicks are called a clutch.
Oh, that's right. A clutch.
I just go outside and say, hey, chickens.
Yes.
I do have one other top tip just came up in my brain, so I'm going to do a bonus, which is if you need something to read, I would say Ryan Holiday is a great writer, and he writes about the Stoics, and Stoic philosophy can be very helpful in this time period. The Obstacle is the Enemy is the book that I might recommend for people at this time. He also has Stillness is the Key and Ego is the Enemy, I think, but I might have screwed up those titles. But anyway, the one about Obstacle is the one that I would say is probably really helpful in this time. And one of the things about Stoic philosophy is what I kind of come back to is, how am I right now? Right? Because so often we can put ourselves in tomorrow. We can put ourselves in worry. We can put ourselves in what's gonna happen. But you know what? Right now, I'm okay. Right now, the birds are outside. Right now, my kids are happy. Right now, I'm making a wonderful dinner. Like, what is happening right now? And anytime you start to feel like you're spiraling out of control in terms of stress, just ask yourself, well, how am I right now? Like, what's happening right now in my body, in my life, in my world? And how can I fix right now? Rather than worrying about tomorrow. Because sometimes the worrying about tomorrow is what's ruining right now.
It's that thinking, Kim. It's like, yeah.
Stop thinking.
Yeah, that's what causes the anxiety. It's like you start thinking about the world, you know, when is this going to end? What's going on right now? Enjoy the moment. I mean, it might sound cliche, but absolutely true. Enjoy the moment. What's going on right now? And also, I just wanted to mention that the chickens were out in the run last Sunday, and I went to get eggs. And I'm like, oh, wait, it's like they've been out here. I know that they've, you know, done their business out here. So I wonder if there's any eggs. So I'm looking around the chicken run to see if there's any eggs. I'm like, I wonder if this is where Easter egg hunts came from.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes people will say like, oh, if you only live in the now, you're not planning for the future. And I say, no, no, no. Like, take the time to think about the future, but in a place where you're in a good space to think about the future. If you're feeling overwhelmed, that is not the time to start doing your taxes.
Yeah.
Right. And you can think about the future. You can plan. That's what you're doing right now. You're planning, yeah. But you're still in the now.
Right.
Planning.
But what's been really good is obviously one of the things that have come up on those reflective things on social media is obviously what this time has given us is that we need actually less. You know, there is so much less in our lives, but we've enriched it in so many other ways. So once we get out of, out of this quarantine or isolation, or we've finished our physical distancing, we have enriched so much of our social connections. We've found different interests. We've honed those interests, or we've actually enjoyed them a lot more. You know, we've found so much more in this time of less.
Yeah, I just throw in here with Kim's book and everything. John and I, if you enjoy garbage TV, watch some garbage TV, because John and I are watching this show called Manifest, and no shame to this show.
But oh, I love that.
It's hot garbage. And we watch it, and it takes us out of the world that where all this is going on, and we get to have a laugh about how bad it is and
it's
stuff.
Great.
But it's really a fun way to blow a couple hours and have no stress for a little bit, you know. And it has very little merits, you know, Days.
So read The Obstacle is the Way when you need some perspective, and then when you need to just get some distance, Manifest.
Yes, there we go. There we go.
Yeah, actually, Manifest, I was telling Matt the other night that I swear it is a senior project, because everything is so, like, this is the way you do it. The shots, it looks like it's a school project. When someone's being pensive, you know, they lay down like this and look off into the distance. It looks so methodical.
Act scared.
Yes. Right? There's so much of that. But yeah, I love bad TV for that reason. Daisy and I both watched Blind Spot, which is one of the worst shows I've ever seen. And I've watched five seasons of it and loved every minute.
It's
every
brilliant.
Minute
I
of
can't
it.
Wait.
We also watched Zombie.
The latest season is supposed to be up soon. Yeah. I can't wait. It is one of my favorites, but it's absolute trash.
I think that we should wrap up the show and sign off.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for joining us here on this duo show, Keto Life Support Meets
Keto Women Podcast.
And so we hope you enjoyed eavesdropping on our chitty chat chat. We're all just good friends, and we can't stop talking when we get together.
And
poor Louise,
seeing y'all.
It's like 2 a.m. Yeah. So we're going to sign off. But thank you guys for joining us. And I think this is going to be illuminating, to say the least.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Right. Bye.
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 To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomenpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Women Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Women Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWomen on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Tolstoy. There is only one time that is important. Now. It is the most important time because it is the only time when we have any power. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.